Let's pray. Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O God, our strength and our Redeemer. From the passage, the second half where he talks about Esau and who? Were y'all listening? Jacob. I want to use that for the focus of my message. And I want to talk about embracing the design of God. The story of Esau and Jacob isn't just about two brothers fighting in the womb. It's really a miracle and a mirror of for you and me. It's a question that we must ask. Who are we? I don't know how often we ask that question. What are we here for? What does it mean to live the true design, whatever that design is that we have been created with? What does that mean inside of us? Genesis chapter 25, verse 22 it's not just a turning point in the Bible, it's a turning point in history. Your history, my history. The text says, but the children struggled together within her. And she said, if all is well, why am I like this? So she went to inquire of the Lord. This one verse jumped out at me as I was looking at the text and is a world in a miniature sentence almost. It's as if it's all redemptive history squeezed into one single moment, a moment where God's sovereignty kind of struggles with these two nations, and the power of prayer kind of collides with that struggle. In this verse, creation, conflict, and calling are all kind of packed into one heartbeat. After 20 years of waiting, Isaac prays, and God opens Rebekah's womb. But notice that the answer to the prayer doesn't bring peace. The answer to the prayer brings pain. The blessing comes wrapped up in this struggle. Have you ever prayed and didn't get what you prayed for? I have. The gift comes clothed in conflict. Out of this tension, God speaks a word and shapes the destiny of the nation. I'm already getting hot, Miss Kenya. The future of families and the hopes of the world. Out of this answer to prayer, the children struggle together in the womb. The Hebrew word isn't really just this gentle word. It's not this soft flutter of new life. It's this crushing. It's this shattering. It's this pressed, battered, smashed together. Even before birth, there is this battle raging inside of the womb. And this isn't ordinary movement. This isn't a gentle stringing. This isn't the first sign of conflict that will echo all the way through generations. This is the first sign. In the mother's womb, it's starting there. A struggle that won't be silenced. A wrestling that will not be ignored. So we've got to pay attention to those early struggles. The phrase, even before they were in the womb, their story had already begun. When did your story begin? And when did my story begin? Even before they were in the womb. It mirrors how social justice struggles are rarely ever fresh disputes. You know, sometimes we look at some of the things happening in the world today and we say, oh, it's not new. It's repeated. It's repeated over and over and over. Instead, they're deeply rooted. Some of the struggles that we're facing today are deeply rooted in historical, generational, and institutional structures. It just changed the way that it looks, but it's the same thing. Think about it, the systemic inequities that happen in the world. Civil rights, land rights, economic disparities, struggles to, they don't emerge in a vacuum. They start way, way back. The story of modern systemic racism or the wealth gaps that we see in the world today, They were authored centuries ago, way back in the womb, through laws, through colonialism, through redlining, through sundown towns. Individuals inherit these kind of pre-existing social positions, started way back. Generational trauma starts way back. And in the text, Rebecca cries out, if all is well. She's wondering, why is this going on if all is well? Why am I like this? Why am I experiencing this? She's not just asking about her body. It seems like she's asking about her soul. She's asking, how can pain live inside of me side by side? How can pain live next to promise? Have you ever asked that question? How can pain live next to promise? How can struggle be the answer to prayer? How can blessing feel like a burden? Her question is the question that I've had, and maybe it's a question that you have had. It's a question that every person who's ever wondered why God's gifts sometimes come wrapped up in trouble. How is it that this blessing from God is coming wrapped up in all of this trouble that I'm having? Why God's promise sometimes comes with pain? The struggle in the womb. It's really more than just biology. It's, according to the Old Testament prophets and according to Old Testament scholars, it's prophecy in motion. The younger would rise above the older will be overturned. What happens inside of Rebecca's body is a sign of what really would happen in the world at the time, the clash between people. The reversal of expectations, you know, all of these things that we don't expect to happen, the breaking of every rule that says the first will always come first is shattered. All of these things are happening way back in the womb. Sovereignty and election. This verse really suggests that God's plan, if we think God has a plan, are set in motion way back. Way back in time. And Paul even talks about this. Paul talks about this in Romans chapter 9, verse 11 and 12, the divine purpose. So he talks about election. He talks about the purpose of God's plan. He talks about how God orchestrates things to work out in God's favor. In Genesis chapter 25, verse 22, it shatters that illusion that God's blessings always comes easy. Has that been the case for you? Or I don't know, maybe I need to take the jacket off. Has that been the case for you that God's blessings have always come easy, always come smooth, always comfortable? What happens when pain and promise collide in your life? That's what was happening in Rebecca's womb. Those are some of the questions the text challenges you and me to ask and suggest answers for in the text, that the faithful response isn't to run away when the pain and the promise collide. The response is not to run away. The response is not to give up. It's to bring our deepest questions straight to God. And that's exactly what Rebecca does in this text. She asks the question, why? She asked the question why to the one who had given her the promise and who was watching her experience the pain. Why to the one who had given her the promise and why to the one who held the answer? Even before Jacob and Esau were born, their story had already begun. The Hebrew text says that they struggled, but it's more than just a struggle. It's a collision with destiny. It's a wrestling of purpose. It's really a force inside the wound that says that two different lives, two different directions, two different destinies are already fighting. And what are they fighting for? They're fighting for space. They're already contending for the future. And Rebecca is feeling this storm inside of her. And she doesn't turn away. Instead, what does she do? She turns to God. And the answer that she receives isn't just for her. It's for all of us who've ever wondered why our lives are marked with some kind of struggle, why our journey is really marked with wrestling, why our blessing sometimes seems wrapped up in a battle. Why can't I just have the blessing? Forget the battle. Two nations are in her womb, and the older shall serve the younger. That's Genesis chapter 25, verse 23. From the very beginning of this story, it's wrapped up by what people expect, or by the rules of society, or by what tradition says should happen. The story is really shaped by this design of what some people call a higher power, a design that comes before we can understand it, a design that doesn't wait for any approval, a design that doesn't need any permission. It seems that something is being orchestrated in the womb. A soul that knows its direction. What direction are you being led in? A heart that knows its calling. What's your calling? Sometimes when that word is used, sometimes we think of a calling preacher, calling clergy person. But I think we all have some kind of calling on our life. What's your calling? Many traditions have reflected really deeply on this mystery, this struggle within the womb. Some ancient commentaries teach that when Rebecca passed a place of Torah study, Jacob stirred within her. So that was the first sign of the calling on his. Esau stirred within her. And this striking image suggests a distinct orientation for each of them, a kind of inner calling for each of them. I sound like I'm academic today because I was doing a lot of research on this text, and it was just like, what's happening here? There's really this profound connection between ancient theology and modern biology, both wrestling within this idea of this birth that's happening inside of her. This birth that's happening. In the biblical text, the womb is the area of a clash between two nations, two worlds, two destinies. And in modern psychology and literature, the womb of an early childhood is seen as the first battleground where nature and nurture kind of does this. It's in the womb. But this raises a hard question for me, and I want you to think about it. If you and I are born with certain stirrings, if you and I are born with certain callings, if you and I are born with certain directions, how much power do we really have to shape our destiny? In some communities, there's a phrase that's been thrown around quite frequently and said, I was born this way. If I was really born this way, how much power do I have to change the way that I was born? How much is given and how much can be changed? This is kind of a mysterious struggle within the womb that suggests each child already carried within himself, these two children, these twins, each of them carried within themselves a distinct orientation, a kind of inner resonance that responded to different realities. They're twins, but they're going in different paths. My wife and I were blessed to have twins, and they're fraternal twins, but they are as different as night is from day. In their personality, in the things that they enjoy, one is like this bubbling extrovert. I don't know where she got that from. It wasn't from me. And the other one is an introvert. You have to squeeze things out of her. In the African-American community, we would describe one as being light-skinned and the other as being dark-skinned. One is taller and the other one is shorter. One is athletic and the other one could care. You don't give her, she doesn't want anything to do with sports or athletics. They had two separate orientations going on inside of them, although they were twins. This connect to Kodash, I think, is the Hebrew idea that which is set apart, designated. They're aligned with God for God's purpose. They have distinct alignment, but it's God that's working in them. It's God that's working in. The story invites you and me to really reflect on a couple of things. And I think one of the things that I struggled with as I was reading the story is to face the hard truth. What stirs inside of us isn't always something to be silenced. What stirs inside of us isn't always something to be silenced. I love my mother. May she rest in peace. But even today, I have hard feelings that my mother suppressed certain things that we couldn't dance in our house. We couldn't listen to certain music because all of this, according to her, was a sin. My father as well. And so I, you know, is this being recorded? Because to this day, dancing doesn't come easy for me, but I'm from Jamaica, and I got beat and rhythm in my bones, but it just won't go down to my feet. There's a sense in which that we can, in ourselves and even those people around us, can suppress, can try to silence something that is naturally inside of us. And dancing was just one example. Who or what has done that in your life? Or who or what are you allowing to do that in your life right now? Silence something, a gift, a talent, an ability, an orientation, whatever it is that God created you with. Sometimes it's the signal of our design, the voice of God's purpose, calling us to say, live it, do it, be it. And as the story unfolds, the contrast between these two brothers really becomes clearer, moving from this struggle in the womb to the struggle for their identity. Who am I? This wrestling inside then becomes this wrestling outside. Once they get out of the womb, they still wrestle. Esau was a skillful hunter, a man of the field. Jacob was a quiet man dwelling in the tent. The Hebrew calls Jacob an Ishtam. Not just quiet, but whole, complete, a man at peace with himself. Can we say that about, am I at peace with myself? Jacob is moving toward integration, moving toward a life where the inside matches the outside. That's a life that I want to live, where my inside matches my outside. Then I'll say to you, what you see is what you get, where the soul and the story kind of line up. Esau is strong, yes, and full of instinct, but his life is tied up with what he can touch. His life is tied up with what he can taste. His life is tied up with what he can see. One brother is searching for wholeness. The other is chasing the world. Came from the same womb. One is seeking to be whole. The other is seeking, I just want to be satisfied. I can't get no satisfaction. That's what it is. Maybe the real, there is this tension. And maybe I'm just preaching to myself, but have you ever experienced that tension? There is this tension in the story. Isn't just good versus evil. Maybe it's the struggle between living in line with our God-given design and then drifting away from it because we're trying to be what somebody else wants us to be. We're trying to look like what someone else wants us to look. We're trying to act the way someone else says we should act. Howard Thurman wrote this poem, and this would be a good either pause or ending spot. And this is what he said. Give me the courage to live, to really live, not merely exist, to live dangerously, scorning risk, to live honestly, daring truth, particularly the truth of myself, to live resentantly. Every changing, every growing, even adapting, enduring the pain of change as though there were travail of birth. Give me the courage to live. Give me the strength to be free and endure the burdens of freedom and the loneliness of those without change. Let me not be trapped by success, nor by failure, nor pleasure, nor grief, nor malice, nor praise, nor remorse. Give me the courage to go on, facing all that awaits on the trail, going eagerly, joyously on, without anger or fear or regret, taking what life gives, spending myself to the full, head high, spirit winged. Gracious God, hear my prayer. Give me the courage to live. The Jacob story, I think, Jacob and Esau story speaks directly into this modern experience, into this place we don't often name, where we kind of inherit expectations. We live in a world that's crowded with expectation, racial expectations, cultural expectations, social expectations, spiritual expectation. We're told over and over what success looks like, what meaning should be, what life ought to be. And in all of this noise, it's so easy to forget who we really are. It's so easy to forget how God designed us. And so my question that I want to leave you with is, what happens to you and me when we try to live outside of our design? What happens to us? What happens to us when we stifle that dance that's somewhere in this foot? You know the worst thing about that? I'm gonna quit right here. I took my mom on vacation about 10 years before she died. And we were in Jamaica. And they had a calypso band going, and my mother got on the dance floor. I'm like, what the? That's where I'm gonna stop. And all I'm, wherever you are, Mom, I love you. People will stifle your gift. My mom was a great person, so I'm not trying to, I just hate when I see people just grooving, and I'm just like, okay, I can do it in the car sitting down, but, you know, okay, move. But people will stifle your gift if you let them. Don't let them.